In spite of the splendid success of the Australian athletes in Tokyo, Japan of late, be it in the pool or out of the pool, one must admit that we, being such a small nation, people-wise, have been most impressive in the medal count. But then again, we who belong here down under are known for our love of sport. It is important for us, isn't it? However, there are limitations to all things. In 20 years from now, will we remember who won what medal in which race or event? Why, in 5 years, what new records will be broken, making records obsolete? One race that will be remembered and bear an immemorial legacy with an eternal reward is the race we run with Christ and for Christ, whose feast is this Sunday, is proof of that fact, a fact of faith. She was an athlete of God. Born in 1842, Mary's ancestry, though Scottish, she is our first native-born Australian saint. We recall her father emigrated to Australia, where he met his future bride, and thus Mary was born. In 1860, Mary became the governess in Panola, South Australia, where by divine decree, in God's providential plan, she met Father Julian Tennyson Woods. Together they teamed up and founded the Congregation of St. Joseph, whose mission was to found schools and orphanages and provide assistance to many people throughout this vast land, in particular in education. The order flourished in face of the dissension, conflict, issues, poverty, it continued to grow. And so too did the sufferings of Mary of the Cross, as she is known. Poor health and rheumatism plagued her for many years. And finally, she died of a stroke on May the 25th, 1909. After many years and much prayer, Mary MacKillop was beatified by Pope John Paul II in 1995 as Mary of the Cross, and then canonized on October the 17th by Pope Benedict in 2010. In this universal year of Saint Joseph, we recall today how much Mary loved this marvelous patriarch and intercessor from heaven. While the sisters of Saint Joseph entrusted all of their apostolic work to his providential care, being the foundation of schools, orphanages, refuges, and overall pastoral care. Today we hear much about Mary of the Cross and the schools that she established all over this vast territory and even overseas in New Zealand. Yet we hear all of her care for the general unwanted people in society. In the 1870s, for example, there was a girl called Isabella Anderson, whom was nicknamed Scotch Bella. She came from Queensland, and she was sought by the law, for she had committed murder. To avoid the law, she dressed as a man for 3 years and enjoyed it, and worked on the roads. Nothing could be done with her. She was a difficult person, one caught up with addictions and violence. Eventually, she was put into jail in South Australia. And she came to the attention of Mother Mary, who convinced the authorities to release her and sent her to a refuge in Kapunda, 80 kilometres north of Adelaide. For Mother Mary had established a house there for wayward girls called St. John's. When Isabella arrived, they regarded her as a raving lunatic, and they couldn't do much with her. But Mother Mary prayed for her and worked on her. And eventually she took instruction and became a Catholic and was baptized. At the end of her term there, she left, met a man, married, and set herself up. But she needed help. So she joined the Guild of Temperance to offset her alcohol addiction. It was. She lived a very good life and died a holy death. All because of Mother Mary of the Cross. Another interesting story was a few years later, in 1878, while visiting the Adelaide prison. Mother Mary wanted to make contact with Hugh Fagan, who was sentenced for murder and soon to be condemned to death. The chaplain, Father Reynolds, and other priests had tried to visit Fagan to have him reconcile his soul with the Lord, but they found him so violent and aggressive that he had to be chained in his cell. When Mother Mary arrived with Sister Felicity to visit him, the warders refused her permission, fearful of any harm that may be inflicted on them. Yet she stood her ground, dressed in her daunting habit, and those peering eyes, she waited, prayed, and insisted. Reluctantly, the warder allowed her access. Two sisters went in to the cell, knelt and began to pray. Prayers caused him to change. At the outset, he was aggressive towards them and abrupt and rude. But gradually, with the prayers being said, the Hail Marys being uttered, he began to thaw. And then eventually he too knelt down and began to pray with them. And as was testified later, became as gentle as a lamb. Mother Mary now prepared him for confession. And the following day, Father came, heard his confession, and brought him Holy Communion. It would be his last viaticum. Now released from the chains, spiritually and physically, he was at peace and ready for death. Mother Mary of the Cross was willing to ascend the scaffold with Hugh Fagan on 16th of April 1878, but at the last moment was forbidden permission, so Father went in her stead. Such was her dedication to souls. Yes, she was truly Mother of the Cross. Life was not always easy for this fledgling order, with a shortage of money and a lack of suitable buildings. We recall that in 1897 to 98, Mother Mary was overseas in New Zealand, both in the South and Northern Islands. And they were given a house near Auckland, donated to them. And she was amazed that there was not one fireplace in the whole building. That means there was no heating. So the sisters would gather in a large room at night was a sheet of galvanized tin on the floor would light a fire. That was their form of heating, to keep warm at least at some stage of the day. On other occasions, food would be so scarce in the convent that they'd have to eat raw vegetables, such as cabbage, as their evening meal. Yet all was done with joy and peace, knowing in some strange way that this was God's will. That's how Mary of the Cross lived, and that's how she died. She ran the race, not for medals of gold, but for the love of God, and now is with him and remembered forevermore.